go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at a minute past the hour. A brand new broadcast week beginneth here upon the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. You could say we're sort of homeless at the moment because the site is down. Oh, stop with the Natalie Tennant ad. Jesus God. Where's that coming from? Hey. Wonder which one that is. No, that didn't get it. No. That's crazy. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now we're all better. That was silly for a little bit. But the last thing I want is to hear a Shelley Moore Capito ad. Ugh. Ugh. Talk about nausea inducing. But anyway, like I was saying, we're kind of homeless right now. Because the website's down, but John Fox is working on a restoration to get, you know, something up and running, just sort of a placeholder until we can do a complete rebuild of the website. Yeah, we're there. It's that. What is that? A little bit of housekeeping. Just a reminder: here in about 2 hours, a little bit later, about 5 hours. For folks on the West Coast. In about 2 hours, All In with Chris Hayes will be on the air, of course, on MSNBC. And this evening they begin a week-long series, All In America, Coal. I'm really looking forward to it. I won't be able to watch it until later because you're on the air here, right? But it should be... knowing the level of work that they do at that program, it should be absolutely amazing. And so I encourage everyone to watch it. Don't necessarily tune away from here, but if you want to, that's cool too. And this individual segments will go up online as well. So that's all this week. And there is a program announcement. We will not be having Friday on the Front Porch this week. Maybe we'll have to make it Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday, Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday, something like that, yeah. Because I will be heading to New York in order to be on the set there with Chris for a roundtable discussion on Friday about all of this coal stuff. Thank you, Joseph. Joseph noting on my Facebook page. Can't wait to see the program. Yeah, I'm pretty anxious, too. It's, I hope a lot of people learn. And I hope this, and, you know, we can all do our parts. You know, this is the social media revolution, right? Share it around. Let people know that it's running. The mountaintop removal portion will be tomorrow evening, Tuesday, the 7th of October. And hopefully a lot of people will learn what mountaintop removal is and just how awful it is and what it does to communities. So if you want to help and do your part, share it around and help teach people about this under-known, under-recognized human rights and human health disaster that's taking place in Appalachia. Sure would be a good thing. Because, you know, through the AIC Act, H.R. 526, I don't know what the new number will be in January, but via the AIC Act, we have a means of stopping this. And it's going to, and in order for the AIC Act to succeed, it requires grassroots activism. That's where y'all come in. That's where we all come in. And, well, there's more than 20 studies, you know that. There's more than 20 studies out that show what a disaster for human health mountaintop removal is. How many studies does it take? Is the magic number 26, 24, 31? I think that's a fair question. I truly do. But I just wanted to make sure that y'all knew as far as what the schedule was going to be. Oh, rats. Okay. We're not broadcasting. Stand by, please. All right. Once more with feeling. We are, I hope, by now streaming. Someone in the chat room will be there, will be along presently to tell me if we are. By the way, while the website is down, there is a back door sort of to the chat room if you want to jump in. The early arrival contingent is already in the room. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, John. Good evening, M. Brandt. Good evening, the Hackloin Princess, and all capably moderated by Lottie and Sparky. Thank you very much. Okay, still silent. There we go. Yep. Thank you. Thank you. I heard Bob. There's Bob. Here's Bob, yes. Anyway, thank you, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn now. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. So, all right. We'll get this going yet. Housekeeping stuff, what you did not hear, I guess, for people with the, who are listening at, later during the podcast or whatever, you can fast forward past this, but not very far. What you didn't hear live was that there will be no Friday on the Front Porch. And as a result of the fact that I'll be flying up to New York to join Chris Hayes in conversation Friday during a roundtable that sort of wraps up the entire coal country feature this week, which begins this evening at 8 and happens every evening thereafter. Okay. Let's do this again. Check, 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 check. Is this thing on? Hopefully it is. And it is... So anyway, we'll try maybe to do a Thursday, a thorn in the side porch Thursday. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. This thing's on. Good. I'm getting a report out of the chat room. This thing's on. I'm really looking forward to it, and hopefully it'll be good. you know, I won't, you know, have a piece of spinach in my teeth or something. Wonderful. Thank you, Sparky. You're live, Bob. Great. Beautiful. So, yeah, this is the sixth day This is the sixth day of October. Another little program note, no Dr. Bill tomorrow. So we will just rerun today's program, which was awesome anyway. Okay, so, yeah, and with the website being down, not only can you, is it hard to get to the chat room, it's also hard to get the live player. If you want, for access to the stream, anytime you can't use the Listen Live button or if you're not using an app or anything, always go to WhiteRoseSociety.org and the subdomain for this program, and all the streaming links are right there. Okie dokie. Good deal. And one last thing. The other thing that's not up at the website is the PayPal button. And ever since the website went down, we have been having, well, fundraising went with it. So please listen carefully. If you would like to help us keep this going, and through no fault of anyone's, we are in a deep and dark hole at this point, getting kind of homey down here. We try to raise $150 an evening, and we're not doing that right now. I don't even know how deep the hole is. I just know it's there. But if you want to help, you can either use the traditional mail address, which is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Or you can simply log into your PayPal account and use the send feature. And for the reception of, and for the recipient, just type in bobkincaid@gmail.com because that's the email that is tied to the Horn's PayPal. Huh, small echo. No idea where that would be coming from. Thank you, Luda. So the more the merrier, please, because, like I said, we got over that one crisis hump of things that we were not looking toward having to pay with the change in the technology and everything. But, you know, so PayPal, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and we're trying to raise $150, and we haven't. Thank you very much to Jeremy, whose subscription contribution came in today. Wow, that seems like a whole bunch of housekeeping. But now that it's wrapped up, we can get down to, you know, business.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up. Behind this thin, ultra-thin veneer of cybernetic canvas, you will find, for your amazement, for your horror, for your laughter, you will find an array and a gathering of Morans, the likes of which you can scarcely imagine. Right-wing Morans, repig-licking Morans, birchers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger-eaters, teabagging Morans, Morans as far as the eye can see. A gentle reminder, please keep purses, bags, and small children in your possession at all times. The Morans can get grabby. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes. We have them in rare profusion this afternoon, this evening, and we will march merrily through the lot of them. Thank you very kindly, Robert. Loud and clear in Oz. Hallelujah. And hopefully,
Sylvia, you're getting the stream by now. Sylvia said, please correct this. I'm looking for Moran Monday. And, yeah, Moran Monday is well underway in the chat room. Let's see, where to start? Because we got so dang many. And I do mean we got many. This is it beggars the imagination what we've got. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. All right, let's start with, I know, you hate him, don't we all? But we might as well get it going and get it out of the way. Well, no, I mean, okay, warning. This is not a sports story, so... All the people who get snippety with me for talking about sports, just don't, because it's not a sports story. It just happens to occur within the context of sports. This is a sports story, on the other hand. Our buddy John Fox is beside himself with joy right now. His beloved South Sydney Rabbitohs took the rugby league title. What would be a couple of days ago now, and the first in eons for the Bunnies, and John is just in sport bliss. I watched some highlights of the game, and wow, you know, I think let's think about it. Take for instance Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football. Put Johnny Manziel on a rugby pitch for a little while, and he no, where's my helmet? Where's my pads? You mean I got to just keep going for minute after minute? We're not going to stop play and get a breather and take a blow? And them people out there hit hard. The leader, one of the leaders of the Bunnies, played 80 minutes with a compound fracture to his cheek. But anyway, this is not a sports story. This is a Moran story, because it's Moran Monday. And have we got a bunch? So, the Jacksonville Jaguars hosted the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. And they have a mascot, Jackson DeVille. Who decided it would be fun to taunt Steelers fans with their signature thing they do. If you go to a Mississippi State football game in Starkville, Mississippi, you will go deaf from the cowbells. Cowbells are their thing. Well, in Pittsburgh, for those of you who don't know, they wave a yellow towel. It was invented by Myron Cope on sports. It was invented by Myron Cope in 1975, not the towel, but the concept. He called it the terrible towel. And so, Steelers fans wave their terrible towel. And Jackson DeVille, is described as a playful jaguar costume. The role is played by one Curtis Dvorak. And Curtis Dvorak, walked around with a sign that said, towels carry Ebola. and held up a terrible towel as an example of same. The Jacksonville Jaguars issued a press release today apologizing, which is probably a good idea. It was sort of a non-apology apology by Jacksonville management. Improvisation and humor have both been key elements to the character of Jackson DeVille, especially when he performs at home games. This is Jaguars president Mark Lamping. On Sunday, the person who has played Jackson DeVille over the past 20 seasons made an extremely poor decision in that regard. The team was unaware of this inappropriate sign, which was handmade by Jackson during the fourth quarter of yesterday's game until after it had been displayed. Yeah, nothing says funny like mocking a disease that's already killed a few thousand people and may, according to the Centers for Disease Control, infect upwards of 1.5 million people by January if it isn't aggressively dealt with, which of course it won't be. They're trying, but no. Remember, President Obama asked Congress for $88 million to try to stem the tide of Ebola, and the Repiglic and Moran-Rich House of Representatives said, "We ain't giving you more than $40 million because we know how you are with that money. You'll just go out there and, I don't know, you'll give some more Obama phones to everybody." Right? Ebola. Ebola jokes. Charming. Just delightful. But Ebola seems to be the star around which a lot of morality is orbiting these days. You know, witness, you know, America's truth detector.
It isn't. They say it's hard to get. Obama's telling us that. The CDC guy is telling us that it's hard to get. They're telling us we've got nothing to worry about. In fact, I don't know if you were listening on Friday, but we had this author. I can't remember his name now, and I wish I could. David something or other. And he actually said in his own politically correct way that we bear the responsibility for these people in Africa getting this disease, and we can't turn our backs on them because of that. He said the only reason they are there is because of American slavery. Liberia came to exist because of American slavery, and since they fled this country to escape the bonds of slavery, and they set up Liberia, if it hadn't been for us, they wouldn't now be suffering from this virus. And so we can't turn our backs on them. We are culpable. In his way of thinking, if it hadn't been for us, if it hadn't been for slavery, there might not be Ebola. Now, he didn't say it in those words, but it's inescapable.
Yeah, and it's inescapable in your own mind or in the radio waves that you're receiving through the fillings in your teeth, Flush. God, does oxycodone really rearrange your brain chemistry that way after a while? He said we're responsible for Ebola because we sent those people over there. And he said there wouldn't be Ebola except for us, except he didn't say it, but it's inescapable. Jesus. I mean, man, that is some 200-proof moron. That's not just any moron. That's the straight stuff. There's nobody that I'm aware of, caveat. There is nobody saying that the United States created Ebola. Except the voices in Rush Limbaugh's head. And yes, people are concerned. We had what I thought was a fascinating discussion on during Friday on the front porch about all this. I still think that we ought to, if the Democrats had a spine, I miss you, Bart Kopp. If the Democrats had a spine, there would be an ad campaign in Texas. Why is Rick Perry putting millions of uninsured Texans at risk for Ebola? I mean, nobody's actually said that, but the conclusion is inescapable. Jeremy in Vermont with a note. Bob, I didn't get to the puck in time. They fleed? We shipped them there when there was no more profit to make out of their blood, sweat, and tears for free. Well, yeah, this is not Flush's long suit, that their history. Of course, he does write history books for children that they like to use to teach children in South Carolina, Stan. Rush Revere and the... Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so I'm sure... we're not even half done with the stupid. There's more... It's more on Monday. We got plenty. Take two. They're small.
That conclusion... My point to you, Cliff, and I know that there are going to be some people smirk at this. David Quammen was the guy's name. And he...
Why is there smirk about that? Yeah, I don't know. Carol noting that Rush thinks everything's a conspiracy about them wrong colors. Well, that's the truth. David Quammen, and I know there will be some smirk. Why?
He's a well-known Ebola expert and has written books about it. And I'm telling you, there are oddballs. There are people in this country. Do not doubt me on this, folks. There are people in this country who believe what this guy said, that this is ultimately traced back to us because of our slavery, and these poor people had to leave this country because it was so horrible here because of slavery, and they established Liberia. Sierra Leone, by the way, was established by British African-Americans who fled slavery there.
Wait, huh? British African-Americans? It's getting confusing. How many oxys do you think this guy is still chewing up for the refreshing burst of flavor before airtime every day? British African Americans. Under tooled leather. Wow. Yeah, Lottie in the chat room. Welcome to the Ebola Palooza. British African American. But then there's the whole history thing. Check me on this, but I don't think the people who were transported to Liberia had much say in the matter. Because you will recall, historically, and I would not expect Rush or any of the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for brains, I would not expect him to know that Frederick Douglass went to Abraham Lincoln and addressed this issue specifically, telling him, Mr. President, I am not going to Liberia. I am an American. I was born in this country. I am of this country. I am a citizen. I should be a citizen of the, I am a citizen of this country. I'm a free man. Why would you ask a bunch of Americans to move to a foreign country? Uh, I want to hear that British African Americans part again.
And if it hadn't been for that, they probably wouldn't ultimately traced back to us because of our slavery. And these poor people had to leave this country because it was so horrible here because of the slavery.
You hear how he just kind of blows it? Those poor people had to leave here because of what? You know, Rush, slavery really was awful. I mean, just ask that latest wife of yours that you keep down in the pit. I can make your life a living hell. It puts the lotion on its skin. Or else it has to listen to me again. But the blithe way he just said, yeah, slavery was bad. These poor people, like they weren't poor people. God almighty.
And they established Liberia. Sierra Leone, by the way, was established by British African Americans who fled slavery there.
I just love that. British African Americans who fled slavery there. It's okay, Rush. No, it's not okay. See, he can't say persons of color. He can't say Negroes. Because if he said that, the oxy might kick in, and he would then say the word he itches to say every day. It's like withdrawal symptoms. I mean, he just itches all over. Because ever since Barack Obama's candidacy was announced, ever since Jesse Jackson was running for president, Rush Limbaugh has just yearned to key the mic and say, only the whole word. You'll recall that he once told a caller to his program to call him back when you get when you take the bone out of your nose. Yeah. Asking one time why all the wanted posters all looked like Jesse Jackson. Yeah. Ah, Carol noting, you have to forgive Rush. No, I don't. He graduated from the Sarah Palin School of Social Studies. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, that's right. The British African Americans.
Oh, okay. So there's just a little bit left of this.
And if it had to leave this country because it was so horrible here because of slavery, and they established Liberia. Sierra Leone, by the way, was established by British African-Americans who fled slavery there. And if it hadn't been for that, they probably wouldn't have. So there's some people who think we kind of deserve a little bit of this. Make no mistake, that is leftist political correct thinking.
As it exists only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the ears of Rush Limbaugh and surround his gigantic lizard brain. Yes. Because obviously, I mean, who could possibly be a better expositor of liberal thought than a not even remotely liberal? Huh?
It's always been around. The danger we have now is that we've elected people in positions of power and authority who think this or think like this.
Because he says they think like this. Now, granted, there are 50 seconds left in this clip. Duct tape, hockey puck. Do it now. Okay?
In terms of this country being responsible, this country being to blame for things. And is that kind of thinking which leads to opposition to shutting down airports from these various countries? It leads to opposition to keeping these people out of the country. How dare we? We can't turn our backs on them. They exist because of us. We can't turn them away. Well, that means that anything that happens to anybody here because of that policy, we kind of deserve. And it's a perverted, convoluted way of thinking, and it's there. political correctness has been around for a long time, and it's always been over there. It's always been fringe, but it isn't fringe anymore because we've elected people to think this way. They say it isn't.
You got that? Yeah. That one in our White House thinks white people, even though he's half white, even though race is a BS construct, that one in our White House thinks white people deserve Ebola. Might be time to head back to that rehab center in Arizona and talk to some more horsies, Raj. Golly, Ned. Liberals think we deserve Ebola. Now, I don't listen to nearly as much progressive radio as I would like. There aren't enough hours in the day. But I know for a fact, I've never heard Rick Smith say it, that somehow the United States created Ebola. I've never heard Malloy say it. Pretty sure Hartman hasn't said it. I don't think Stephanie would even say it as a joke. Ed's not out there saying it. Nicole Sandler hasn't said it. Shannon Moore hasn't said it. Who then? Except for the little oxy monsters that live inside Flush Flimball's speckled noggin. And, of course, we expect him to say this crap. Because he's a moron. And because his brain's been eaten by little OxyContin spirochetes. Or prions, or what the hell ever. But, we expect it of him. But the ones we don't think about enough are the people who are out there driving around in their cars or sitting at home listening on their Bose Wave radios because, you know, Bose was a long-time sponsor of Flush. That's why I won't own any Bose products. Well, that and can't afford them. But anyway, it's the people who... Did you hear that, Marvelline? Rush just done proved that one, that Kenyan Muslim, wants us all to get the Ebola and die so that he can rule forever as the maximum dictator over a dark-skinned nation. And there are several million of them. Yeah, but like I said, Ebola is the star around which much moranity is orbiting. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. How many of Russia's discriminating listeners, see what he did there? Discriminating listeners, get it? How many of Russia's discriminating listeners let that British African-American statement blow right by them without a second thought? All of them, at least the ones who aren't listening to him for the pull quotes for purposes of showing the world what an idiot he is, what a no-kidding moron he is. But if it's Monday, it's got to be either Elizabeth Hasselbeck or Andrea Tanteros. This is Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, for reasons that plumb evade me, went on Fox. Because now, one of the aspects of the Ebola crisis is that it has given new life, in a sort of zombie kind of way, new life to the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers who have been hooting for years about how we need to close the borders. First, we needed to close it because of the Mexicans. And then we needed to close it because of them Guatemalan youngins. And now we need to close it because of ISIL. Remember, ISIL's going, we done heard it from down there to Lubbock. No, I'm sorry, Mac Allen. Was it Mac Allen? Anyway, their sheriff, remember he was gonna bust a cap in ISIL's ass? Remember that? And he's talking about how they done found the Muslim, the Muslim clothing down there in the dry riverbed of the Rio Grande River. Yeah. Thank you, Devin. Correct pronunciation coming in. I've got a Devin's good for pronunciation. Ebola. Exactly. So now we've got to close the borders because of Ebola. You heard that reference referred to in the Flimball clip. These liberals won't close the airports because it's not politically correct, and Barack Obama wants everybody, all the white people, to get Ebola. Chewy. You know, when you've been as junked up as Rush has been, I wonder how many it takes to get off. Nah, don't worry. Does he crush them up and snort them off a mirror? I don't know. Did he cook them? Shoot them? Let's not speculate. So, yeah. So here's Dr. Anthony Fauci on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, God knows why. And isn't that interesting? The audio is not going to run. So you'll just have to trust me on this. Elizabeth Hasselbeck was there on Fox and Friends. You know, there's a reason that program is not called Fox and Brains. After noting that an NBC cameraman had been allowed into the United States for treatment, and then talking about the Dallas Ebola, Ebola patient. Oh, okay, Devin. Devin says I'm still saying it wrong. You hold the E tone real long, like a long yeehaw. So Ebola. Okay. Got it. Thank you, Devin. So Elizabeth Hasselbeck, and I wish to goodness I knew why these, never mind.
Why are we still letting people into the country who could have possibly been exposed? Why not just shut down the flights and secure the borders? Many of you want to know, why not, just as a precaution until we get things under control, seal off the border temporarily?
Oh, my God. Bless his heart, Dr. Fauci said that Elizabeth was not making any sense. He said, if we completely isolate them, don't let anything in, don't let anything out, we know from experience with public health that marginalizes them, and you could have civil unrest, governments could fall, and then you wind up having spread the virus to other countries in West Africa, which would only compound the problem. Because that's one of the occasionally reported on factors out of this whole business, is that one of the things that happens with plague level epidemic level disease outbreaks is that almost all of civil society begins to collapse. Farmers can't harvest food.
or plant it or process it. It can't be gotten to market. People at the markets can't market it because they don't have it, and B, they're too sick to market. And so dominoes really do begin to fall. And what Dr. Fauci was saying is that they would fall even harder, even faster, if, in fact, we sealed off the borders. This, however, was not good enough for genius Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Well, has the government considered something less extreme? Perhaps flights that were approved to go for treatment, for aid, for supplies to the area, but any other flights would have to go through an approval process to a limited flight travel plan? Not a complete closing. I don't think anyone who has a heart wants a group of people to just suffer alone in the world, and there are those that want to go and help, and my heart is with them. But what about a partial ban, a closing of our borders?
And suddenly Dr. Anthony Fauci was beginning to ask himself the question, why did I come on here? Because with all of that, he responds, a closing of our borders? I'm sorry.
I don't know what you mean by that. Well, you know, flights that are specific to helping the situation, as you just deemed important, which many Americans would agree with you, sir. But what about any other flights just restricted?
But the light was not reaching.
He tried, Dr. Fauci did. He really did. He said, you have Americans there. You have business people. People of dual citizenship who have to go back and forth. It's completely impractical. In fact, from a public health standpoint, not helpful to do that. And I think every public health official feels that way.
Well, you know, I mean, that's how it is. They're smart people, and they think they're smart because they're smart people. And, oh, you're Mr. Smart People. You've got all the smart answers.
Well, that's how it works. Yeah, Devin noting, the pain, oh, the pain! Dr. Smith, Lost in Space. We haven't had a Lost in Space reference, I don't know, if in a very long time. Yeah, it's kind of, well, remember the clip we had last week? John Cleese? Yeah. What did he say? If you're very, very stupid, how can you possibly realize that you're very, very stupid? You'd have to be relatively intelligent to realize how stupid you are. And therein lies the rub. Welcome to Fox. Welcome to a Fox discussion of Ebola.
Golly! All we gotta do is seal the borders and make sure nobody comes in or out of Sierra Leone and Liberia and stuff. And then, you know, maybe when they're all dead, we can just go in there and, repopulate it. I'm sure we've got some folks over here in America who would love to move over there.
They did last time. Meanwhile, sciencey stuff from Carol. So far, avoiding infected bushmeat and refraining from kissing sweaty Liberians on my numerous international flights to West Africa has kept me safe without closing the borders. Absolutely true, but remember, right-wingers live on fear. They're like that Star Trek monster, especially right-wing broadcasters, whether it be Flush or Elizabeth Hasselbeck. They got to gin up some fear among Emery and Eileen and Clyde and Dreema and Marveline and
Yeah.
The Morans, ye have always with ye. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Nice little crowds formed in the Horn chat room if you want to wander by. Will from Chicago in there. Waggy's in there. Todd, the Hackling Princess, Texas T. Mr. Gibson's with us. Embrant, Kelly Ten, Kathy. John's with us, Devin's with us, Carol, Anatole, and John Fox is in the chat room this evening. Hey, John. All capably moderated by Lottie and Sparky. That's a good crowd for a Morian Monday. We are an hour into the program. Well, we're an hour into what was scheduled for the program. We're 45 minutes into the program. And just another note, we try to raise $150 each evening to keep things going. We haven't done that in a very, very long time. If you would like to contribute to the program until the PayPal button is up, which John Fox is working on even as we speak, you can simply sign into PayPal and use the send function, and the address would be Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And then we'll do some bill paying. Yay. And we may crawl a ways out of the hole. And that'd be nice. Because the hole is every bit of, well, we've got we've still got $100 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge because of, you know, problems. So for anybody who kicks in the first $100 in any amount, that your money gets doubled because that's what remains in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Also, anybody who kicks in, you know, $100 gets a smoky ghost pepper cheese or pistachio premium via Sparky. And if you want that, just let me know. And let me know pistachios or smoky ghost pepper cheese. And then give me an address for Sparky to send it to, and it will be winging its way toward you. And Sparky very carefully monitors its progress as it goes. So, yeah, BobKincaid@gmail.com via PayPal, and you can double your money. Cool. By the way, in the course and scope of the Ebola discussion, it might be beneficial. It would be beneficial. In fact, I think you'd like it. Our buddy Carol has a new post up. Carol Baker at HereWomenTalk.com, HereWomenTalk.com. Doctor, I think I have tennis Ebola. Oh, Jesus. But it puns notwithstanding, it is a worthy and worthwhile read and needs to be read broadly. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the smoky ghost pepper cheese. We have a review in from Tom in the Bay Area. So, I wanted to make sure that I got this out there. Tom wrote to say, thanks to Sparky for the cheese. After hearing some of the comments, I approached it with some trepidation, but it's awesome. Right on my edge for heat. And it really does well in a sandwich.
It's not just cheese. It is a meditation on hot pepper cheese. Whoa. And I agree wholeheartedly. A meditation on hot pepper cheese, and it does go well in a sandwich. I agree. I finally made my smoky ghost pepper cheese on sourdough grilled cheese. It had some tomato soup and woohoo! Oh, it was yummy. It was wonderful. Note from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line: Now this is white privilege. Elizabeth Hasselbeck is a prime example. This woman is too stupid to pontificate on anything, yet here she is making megabucks, spewing her stupidity for all to hear. As Ron White says, you can't fix stupid. Nope, I think, Elizabeth Hasselbeck is terminal. No, not terminal, that's not nice. Let's say that she is. Stupid is not acute with her, it is chronic. Precisely. So here we are at a little past the top of the hour. Jeremy with another note says, the problem, Bob, is these subhuman crap-spitting fools, these right-wingers, all truly believe that books like 12 Years a Slave were revisionist thinking and writing. I mean, that old Negro spiritual was really happy, singing, thankful, if that lashed for not fast enough work, or simply passing out and possibly dying from heat stroke. FF's sake, okay, I'm done. Yeah. Is it safe to say that even stupidity can be a part of privilege? That there are some people who can get away with being stupid just based upon the privilege they have of being them? All right. Let's take a break. I would like to find out why the audio is not playing off the little videos right now. Maybe I'll figure out a way to do that. Hopefully we will match Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and finally finish that this evening. And your calls, of course, to 304-574-8158. Or Skype to Skype to Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way works fine. 304-574-8178. Did I use the wrong number a minute ago? That's the right one. 304-574-8178. And coming soon, a new phone number. And I'll let you know when it goes live. The gizmo should be here tomorrow. So a little break, and then your calls. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is the Horn Family Commune Community. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you.
13 minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday edition of the Horn, this sixth day of October 2014. Let's go straight to the Skype line. Jeremy is with us. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
Hey, not too bad. Yourself?
I'm getting along, I guess. Well, yeah. technical glitches and whatnot, but we'll be okay.
I mentioned here in my home state, we have a CBS affiliate who tends to side themselves with right-wing stories, and they're quite notably for during the Howard Dean administration, especially during his presidential run, for never mentioning him, even if it was sort of good. And then, like so many other people, played the speech in Howard Dean, you know, the excited woo-hoo scream, which really ruined him because they turned into a psycho freak over it.
Yeah, right.
Well, I've given them some credit a couple of weeks back about a story they put up about, a transgender supermodel coming here. They've done it in a positive light. Well, this last weekend they had a political freakout because Goddard College in Vermont is Mumia Abu-Jamal's alma mater. He got his degree here after many years in prison for, we all know, a murder of a police officer. I'm not 100% familiar with the case, but they mentioned him twice, once this weekend and once today, because the ceremony was held in secret, and they did it so there wouldn't be a bunch of uproar over it. And both times they did it, they made it quite clear three or four times in the article that Mumia Abu-Jamal is a cop killer, and it's probably, is it a good thing? So, of course, they found the one right-winger at Milton, probably a few of them, but at least one that was from Vermont and Goddard, who said she's ashamed of being a Vermonter today because he spoke at the commencement speech.
Oh, for great heavenly days.
Yeah.
It makes you want to run the yard and tear at your clothing, doesn't it?
It does, because, I mean, yes, I admit what... Killing anybody a horrible, horrible thing, and I don't. Either way, if you're right or left, I would never say it's a good thing. But I do think in his time in prison, he has bettered himself and become a voice for the people who are less spoken or don't have a voice. And I found him quite a few years ago doing his little 2-minute or 3-minute, even 5-minute sound bites from prison, and it always struck a tone with me because they seem sincere from the heart. And that being said, like I said, I think he's bettered himself to a point where he is not the same vigilante he may have been back in the day. Not to say I don't believe in the stuff he fought for, because I wholeheartedly believe in the people he stood with, like Malcolm X and people like that. But he has changed himself. So I think to keep slandering this guy whenever he comes up and does something positive and gives a positive message to young people.
But see, Jeremy, the thing here is that after a while, it becomes a matter of dog whistling or code talking.
Well, exactly. I understand it's because he's black. That's why I'm really offended that he spoke there. But yes, that's really what it is. If it'd been a white person for the same thing, I'm sure they'd been fine with it. If it'd been Bush giving a commencement speech from Guantanamo or some prison club somewhere, it'd be just fine because he's a white guy. But this is a Mumia Abu-Jamal, a black guy who's an Islamist who's also killed a cop. So that's the kicker of it all.
Well, that's the trifecta. You know, everything you could possibly need to get a right winger really hopping up and down and poofling, and it's all right there.
Right, and
consequently, it's used. Well, it's the same thing as what I was talking about with the close the border thing. It rained today. We need to close the borders! Right?
Right, yeah. That doesn't make any sense either. That helps expand the problem. We all know that as sensible thinking people, but Elizabeth Hasselbeck has never been on any show she's been on as a sensible thinking person. I mean, she sure loves to sling the mud, but if you sling it back at her, she'll cry like a little bitch. Not creating women, but she'll cry and say, you hurt my feelings and you were mean to me for no reason. But
She'll
do the same thing mockingly to someone else, and it's fine when she does it. So, I don't know, but I just saw that article the last couple of days, and especially today, and it annoys me because, especially today, they put in there in the beginning, convicted killer makes commencement speech, and then halfway down through, after they got through with the person that said she's shamed of their mother and shamed of going to Goddard College because of this, he's a convicted cop killer, 19, blah, blah, whatever, and has spent X amount of years in jail. Not to mention that he's in California, isn't he?
Mumia?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So something my father was in California, I was going to say, because he's, I know he got commuted to life, which is, I don't know if that's any better after being given 30 years on death row, but I don't know. But still, it hurts me to think we still do this in this day. Even a simple hometown thing will try to slander something, which obviously they have no idea who this guy is. Don't listen to him. You don't hear him being the voice for the voiceless. I mean, he's spoken out everything from the pipelines to even coal to schools to teachers. He's a big person who was against both Iraq and the Afghanistan war. And, I mean, he puts out there all the time that the world has watched us slaughter hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, in these countries, and they're disgusted with it. But here we go again. We're going at it again.
And we'll do it again and again and again. As long as it suits their hateful needs. Because, well, consider this, Jeremy. This just dawned on me. There are a couple of hundred more than 3,000 deaths from Ebola since the beginning of this year in Sierra Leone, Liberia, those little West African nations. Compare that with the fact that we know that there are 4,000 statistical excess deaths in West Virginia. We're not counting Kentucky or Virginia or Tennessee in this, just West Virginia. In West Virginia's mountaintop rural communities. Counties, I should say. Counties, more accurately. That's every year. Now, that's not contagious, and that is because of the hydrocarbon extraction industry, to wit, coal. Therefore, those 4,000 deaths don't bother the right wing a damn. The actual deaths in Sierra Leone and Liberia don't bother the right wing a bit. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, Jeremy. They are perfectly happy. It is their white hides they're worrying about. After all, you've got them. They're out there. That one minister of the gospel who said that Ebola was a plague sent by God to get rid of liberals and gays.
Psychopath. Here's another scary little fact for you. I think I told people, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I do not remember one time in world history class, or any history class for that fact, ever being taught where Liberia was founded. I only found that out through my own research. And maybe that's how Rush and some of these other fear-mongering crap-spitters can get away with the statement that, hey, like, these people fled to Liberia because we didn't want them anymore. They ran there. When in truth be told, we loaded them on ships and sent them and said, here, live here now in this beautiful hot hellhole, which is nowhere near where you were born for the most part or where you were transported from before. It staggers the mind that people are listening to this and like, hey, yeah, those British people, those British African Americans. Okay.
Jesus.
Even though the British Empire outlawed slavery long before we did, still.
Well, just the idea that they're British African Americans. I mean, hey.
Right. It hurts the head.
So, I mean, so that would have to, in order to create the demographic British African Americans, you would have to be stolen from Africa, transported to the United States, perhaps during colonial days, and then somehow or another you got taken as a slave to the British Empire, and then after they outlawed it, you were sent to Sierra Leone, and that, wow, maybe it happened. Who knows? You know, he is America's truth detector, Jeremy. And he really does operate with half his brain tied behind his back and talent on loan from God. Margin call! Sorry, I had to do that.
I'm going to go get sick now, so I'll let you go so I can talk. I just want to bring up that Amuya Jamal thing really pissed me off. People still swear to this guy, and he's done a lot of good in his time served, just to the common knowledge of people, I think. He has a good message now. I stand for him. I think he should at very least be given maybe a possibility of parole at some point in his life. He's done 30 years. It's the average lifespan of a lot of people, so why not?
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jeremy, have yourself a good evening. We'll talk soon.
Bye now. Bye.
Our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont. And quick note. See, this is what makes the Horn Family Commune Congregation the Horn Family Commune Congregation. It has come to my attention that a couple of our chat room regulars, friends, members of the Family Commune Congregation, Todd and Kathy, are, even as we speak, celebrating their 13th wedding anniversary. Where are they celebrating it? They're celebrating it in the Horn chat room along with all of us. So from all of us to you two, happy anniversary, Todd and Kathy. Happy anniversary indeed. Oh, and by the way, we'll be talking a little cold this evening. Right after this program ends, I'll be joining Mike Malloy for a conversation over on his program. And that is always a happy, pleasant opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it. So just thought I'd give you a heads up. Right, it should be right at the top of Mike's program this evening. Let's go back to the phones. I believe we have Mr. Stress, Bill. Hey, Bill.
How you doing, Bob?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. About you?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about, when Rush first came on the air, how many years ago? I used to listen to him, and occasionally the guy had a sick enough sense of humor to get me, but then the more you listen to him, all of a sudden you realize, hey, this guy talks. Who's paying his John Birch Society paying him? Because, that was where all of his ideas come from. And they got worse and worse and worse. Coming from the angle of success, is that guy fading someone? Have he faded a lot? Audience and stations and such?
Yeah, he's hemorrhaging. Well, more than anything else, he's hemorrhaging advertisers.
Yeah. Because I'm not interested in something that picks up a bowling ball, So.
In fact, I didn't cover the story.
Exactly.
I didn't cover the story, but I should have. It turns out that it's gotten so bad that that they hired a PR firm to come out and attack the Stop Rush movement, which is fine by me because it elevated the. It elevated the awareness of what Stop Rush has done. They claimed that it's just a couple of people out there and they're making more. No, it's a whole lot of people working together through social media to make these companies aware of where the hell they're buying their ads.
Yeah.
And it is because the Stop Rush movement has just blistered.
What scares me a little bit, Bob, when I start talking to somebody, they start looking at you like you're, you just waved a hammer and sickle in their face,
Yeah.
And, I don't know, that's why I'd love to sit down and have a couple of beers with Dr. Bill about how history is being taught in this, and has been taught in this country.
You mean,
I have a buddy who's retired high school history teacher, and he says, Bill, he says, the whole thing was so, you had to cram so much into so short a time that it was, pretty rough to get people to understand anything. And they don't understand it. Because the truth of the matter is that the history, the social history we live in is, how much food can we get on the table? Can we afford to pay for our houses or rents or and cholera forget that stuff, you know. I mean, maybe it's just, I guess it's partly my age, is the fact that I'm such a tight-fisted little creep. What do you mean pay some guy to work on my car? The hell with it. Give me that manual and give me that couple $100 worth of test equipment, and I'll fix this son of a bitch.
Well, see, know? that's where you went wrong, Bill. You could have been a job creator.
Well, I was a job creator, Rick. I created by going out and selling myself to bar owners, not just myself. Bob, I was blessed with some players that were just out-and-out monsters. I had a guy in 68 to about 75 or 8 who was a guitar player and a half. We did two shows with Bonnie Raitt for the Women's Indochina Peace Committee. And she grabbed this guy at the end of the show and says, I want to talk to you. And what she did is she made him an offer of her, if one of her support guitar players quit, she wanted him. And another bass player I had, he went and played with Tower of Power, for crying out loud. Another guy recorded on the Gumbo album with Dr. John. So I was just blessed with people working around me. But I had a thing of, what they'll tell me is they said, Bill, you had a way with, your ear was so good for picking material. I said, yeah, what did the material talk about? What the material talked about is what you try to reach out and hit people with.
Right, and in many instances, it spoke to very basic human emotions and human wants and needs, right?
Yep, that's the thing. Well, the most gratifying was to be part of a group with two young white musicians and two older black musicians playing in a bar, and it was the customers were all black folk, the older people, you know, than me. And they'd walk up to me, how did you start listening to this? I said, how did you start listening to it? And they just laugh. I said, you know, it's music is, at best, is a universal language. It talks to everybody. Country has that gift. Bluegrass, my God. Bluegrass and Dixieland, to me, are so close. When you've got two or three instruments playing simultaneously, and your ear has to be able to hear all three at once and hear them merge together, you know? But, yeah, Limbaugh, getting back to that, he should have gone to the slam for a while for OxyContin, I'll tell you. I know that sounds terrible. But if it's good enough for a poor guy, it ought to be good enough for that creep.
When his troubles were underway and he was being popped for doctor shopping, there were actual real working Americans doing prison time in Florida for exactly what Limbaugh was given a pass on. And I don't mean doing 5 or 6 months of county time. I mean doing hard time in the state pen.
Yes, for the same thing. I mean, the whole idea of marijuana still being illegal anywhere is like, are you kidding me? My old man got popped in the 40s, and only due to the fact that his brother worked for the harmonica. MAFIA, you know, he was a.
Yeah.
They called my uncle a man with a golden hand because he could fix every coin operated machine that they had, you know, including. I walked in his basement and there was four or five slots, maybe six, sitting on the basement floor that he was working on. So, you know, and this stuff has been around forever. And they act like. And really, you know. Barry Goldwater used to come on the Tonight Show. I don't know if he was with Leno or Jack Parr. But he talked about Arizona and how reefer was free-flowing in Arizona. It grew everywhere and anywhere, Bob.
Because it's a weed.
Yeah, exactly what it is. Well, that's one weed I'd rather puff on that than the... That finely growing tobacco from Virginia, and why are they growing tobacco in the States anymore, Bob?
Oh, no, it still gets grown. It's grown in Carolina, it's grown in Virginia, it's grown in Kentucky. And they even grow a little bit of it yet in Connecticut. A Connecticut shade wrapper is a very, very sought after wrapper leaf for cigars.
Like most of your Macanudos are Connecticut shade grown.
I know in Canada I was able to buy some Cuban cigars. Oh, man. I hate to say that.
Oh, they're nice.
Oh, yes. They have a great taste to them, and I don't know.
I was able to bring a few home from our little jaunt in the Caribbean a couple of years back.
Yep.
And it was, I rationed them to myself, and they were some kind of special.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. Was that the Caribbean or the Caribbean?
You pick. You say tomato, I say tomato, and I say tomato, and we'll call the whole thing up.
Hey, what's a lot of this stuff coming from, the pronunciations and stuff changing? I mean, I've heard this stuff on the radio for years, and it was always Caribbean. And all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, it's Caribbean.
I think that's probably a linguistic influence carried over from another tongue. Caribe.
Yeah. Well, Limbaugh talking about the African Americans. Where was it from?
You couldn't pay to have that stuff written.
Yeah. I mean, and then he actually took his engineer and put him on the air. He played that last week. You think that was for real? Snurdly?
Oh, well, I mean, the guy's name's not really Snurdly. I think there have been four Bo Snurdlys.
Oh, yeah.
At least, I think. That's the demeaning name that he gives to his producer.
That's a rare job. We have a Horn family member who I've gotten friendly with, and he was a radio engineer in his day. Now he's involved with computers, you know, but he was actually an on-the-air engineer, and they bought him out. They kind of tried to get rid of all those guys as much as they can. And that was a special kind of a job, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, the only place they still work a lot is sporting at sports events. You've almost got to have a guy back at the studio who can handle that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And, a really, really top-shelf produced talk program has an engineer. Because, as you've noticed and many have over the years, some people call in this program and their phones sound better than other people's that sound. And it's because there's this wide variety of telephonic devices, and they're not all, you know, once upon a time, and you remember that day, all the phones were the same, except maybe it might be red or black or white or yellow. You know, yellow was really out there. But they were all essentially the same. Well, now they're all, and you need somebody sitting there engineering the audio of the individual calls on the fly.
Yeah.
It's nice to have.
And you know, you hear talk radio around the country, and they give a guy 2 minutes to make a point, you know, and that's about it. And then they got to rush to the next one. And it's not the same thing. Your show and what's his name, the following show, you guys have a whole different attitude. I keep wanting to talk to him about, he's a Toledo guy, and Toledo and Detroit, I have some personal stuff with, you know, and Bowling Green, and to go to Bowling Green and open up for Minnie Riperton and that group she was with, it was like, what an honor. It was such an honor until I stepped off the stage to introduce my guitar player doing an instrumental version of Memphis, which was done by a guy named Lonnie Mack originally. And I think originally the instrumental version. So I go to step off the stage, and the drummer had moved the steps. The fat guy just disappeared off the stage. It was like somebody opened a trap door, and away he went. Oh, well, it was pretty funny when I picked myself up, and I still could stand up. I hadn't broken my back, you know. So at that point, it becomes humor. Anyway, I'll let you go and keep the line open, and I sure appreciate if you... Because the Friday night thing is what I really miss.
Oh, I know. And Now, like I said, we won't have a Friday on the front porch this week because I'll be traveling. But the gizmo, the gizmo arrives tomorrow, and I will start the learning curve that I need in order to figure out how to use it.
Well, I got to hand it to you, Bob. You have a background in electronics, though? Any training?
No, none.
Of course you do. You're good.
Well, I had
I had
exposure to a few really, really good old school, you know, pocket protector glasses held together by paper clips radio engineers, you know, the guys who held the Class A licenses.
Those guys were really, really good, the ones
where you had to go to a big city to sit down and take the FCC test.
Yeah. I think you had to fly to Detroit to get the class that you needed to eat. I have a guy living in the building here with me, and he ran a jazz show in the 60s, and then he was a newsman on a station where he met Muhammad Ali and Don King. But, you know, Don King has a history in Cleveland that included some gray bar moments. It's in the Gray Bar Hotel. Remember that place?
Yep.
That was a good old piece of slang. I wish I could find that book, The Dictionary of American Slang. That is just... And I just got a book back on the Antietam campaign, and that area up there is just so pretty. It's, you know, in the crossings of the Potomac, I imagine they were... What do you think? Martinsburg, would they be crossing into West Virginia now?
Yeah, Martinsburg is in West Virginia.
Yeah, see, and you know what it was then?
Virginia.
Virginia, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because that corner of the, for some reason, Lee, when he went north twice, he went through the Shenandoah Valley, and that was the thing at Sharpsburg when that, some Union soldiers pulled into a camp, and there's a envelope with three cigars in it. When I pick it up, there's a special orders number 191, courtesy of Robert Lee, that basically told McClellan where every one of Lee's units were. And McClellan was such a clown. I wrote to the guy that writes Six Emperor Tyrannus, and my comment was, if Lee had faced George Thomas at Antietam, what do you think? He says he thinks Lee would have got beaten badly. Because Thomas is like an unknown Civil War guy. You know, it's Grant and Sherman and Phil Sheridan. That's what all you hear about. And that was a clique. They looked after each other, those guys, and they were always sticking it to Thomas, and Thomas had a hell of a hard time, even with Lincoln in the beginning, because he was a man from Virginia who did not leave the old army. He stayed with the, American flag, you know, and he made a hell of a name. He just destroyed Hood at the country music capital of the world.
Yeah, sure. Battle of Franklin.
And, Battle of Franklin was one that was badly handled, but when he got up there to, why can't I think of the name of that damn city?
Nashville?
Nashville, yeah. I mean, he destroyed that guy in Nashville. It was the biggest defeat of... In fact, they were teaching that at West Point and other military schools. They were teaching the way he handled that thing. He was a hell of a guy. Strange man in a lot of ways, but what a hell of a guy. That in Virginia could be proud of, because he did the right thing, you know? And he did not like slavery at all, either. And that's... Well, it was an Irish general, too, who... He was Irish, Pat Cleburne. He was born in Ireland, and he was with the Army of Tennessee, not the Tennessee, but the Confederate Army. And he sent a circular around to their army that it was time to start training black men. And, of course, that was just starting with Jefferson Davis on down. Are you kidding me? First of all, they'd never measure up. And secondly, how could we do that and justify slavery, you know? Those sidebars like that always get me, you know.
The little known stuff.
This is what people get for leadership. It's like what we got going today. I don't know. And Bob, you and I look at the Middle East and say that whole thing, starting with the Turkish Empire and the way they treated people, and then the British and French going in there and throwing their weight around it, especially the English, because we sent the English 5 battleships that ran on oil while they were still running on coal in 1917-18. And they had to get their nose in there and get some of that oil. And ever since then, oil has been a problem. And, of course, coal, which had its day, it had a time and a place. It was always terrible, but it was staying warm somehow was a necessity. But with the things that we can do today, it should be off the market totally before they destroy the country. We have a lot of fishing places in southern Ohio that were strip mined, and then the guys turned them into ponds and lakes and fed fish to them and said, come on down and visit and camp out here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, I'll let you go.
All right. You have a good evening, Bill. Good talking to you.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. You'll have that. Whomever you were, feel free to jump back in. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
We know, Jim.
Oh, listen to you and just thinking, about, let me turn the radio down. Hold on a second. There we go. Still there?
Yep. I didn't lose you.
Okay. The other day, this is like Thursday or Friday, I was up kind of early, and I was watching Your Hero and Mine, Morning Joe. And he was talking about, I'm getting to the point where it's like Fox News, you know, I can't watch too much of it because, I mean, it seems like everybody on there is basically far right or pretty far right to pseudo moderate. Do you notice that or do you ever?
Well, I mean, I define that.
They're not too far. There's nothing really approaching left. Of course, you're not going to see that on TV, but you might have some varying points of view. But basically, I mean, I remember this is a while back. I remember when the United States announced it was over the Vietnam War. Same difference. The Iraq invasion occupation. And they were finally coming around to the, and it seemed like I remember them, they were kind of lamenting that, gee, maybe this war was wrong. I just kind of remember that kind of attitude. It kind of, pissed me off. It's just like, man, I knew from the get-go that that was a BS war, you know? This is another invasion occupation, a way to spend money for the military industrial complex.
Sure.
To, spend more, make more, military pieces and try and influence people. And the thing about that, you know, the people we invade, it doesn't seem like it's working. I mean, I don't see, I remember the Bush 2. What if we'll get to Bush 3? Probably, but. Him saying they were going to greet us as liberators.
Yeah.
And anything but. And nobody even points that out. Not even the Democrats. You know?
Well, the problem.
Some like some.
I mean, yeah, some of us do. But the thing is, there's a sense of caution, I guess, a little bit of one at least, about it because, well, we're going back in there now And it ain't a Bush that's putting people back in there.
Yeah.
But to me, it's still, if your politics are such that they will constrain you not to criticize something you vocally and
vociferously criticized in the past when it was being done by a Republican, but you won't criticize it because it's a Democrat. That's just gross to me.
No, I'll criticize Democrats for you.
Yeah, I'm not saying you. I'm talking about, well, you know what I mean.
You know me, everything's fair game. But, you know, but also the thing about Morning Joe, the thing he was talking, I remember his big issue was, money for Republicans. What about the Democrats have outraised the Republicans? And I don't know what statistics of what he was using, but he was just all over that. He was, you know.
Is he still out there, mounting that, that stirring defense of the Koch brothers?
I caught one or two, a little bit of that. Yeah, I don't see what's wrong with that. And then really makes me want to puke and vomit because I realize the flaws of the holy grail, the capitalist system. I mean, it really is a joke. To me, I guess I'm not going to be CEO of IBM or anybody or, Gulf, what is that? They don't even have Gulf Oil. I guess there goes my chance for, VP. But, you know, you're just, but he's just making a big issue about the Democrats. Well, they've raised more money and then the whole thing, while I'm listening, I think, well, I guess let's just take money out of politics. That could be done.
Sure.
Am I not correct?
Absolutely. It could be done.
Then the Trump, I've given up to talking
about it. But the problem, Jim, is while it could be done, the people who have to do it are the people who are benefiting from all the money in politics. Therefore,
exactly.
Therefore it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling failure.
Right. Exactly. I mean, And also, I mean, if you're running for the Senate, right, and you're a senator, okay, you end up spending $1.5 million, but you raise $2 million. I know that's probably a gross exaggeration of what they end up having to raise. But, okay, so you have like $500,000 left over. You get to keep that in your slush fund, right? That's slush. Your war chest, and then like you serve for a couple of terms, and you've amassed, let's say, $3 million in your war chest. You get to keep all that money.
Yeah. Nice racket, right?
Yeah, it almost sounds a little bit like bribery.
Oh, but wait, they couldn't possibly be that. I mean, no American politician would ever accept a bribe, right?
Yeah. No. And then the other thing I remember, this just crossed my mind, it's like, I remember Dennis Miller when he used to be on Saturday Night Live, and he was pretty funny.
Oh, you remember? Oh, what you're saying is you remember Dennis Miller when Dennis Miller used to be funny.
Yeah, but that's decades ago. God, I'm getting old, Bob. And then I remember he had his late night talk show was lasted about a week. Or two, three, a couple episodes. It's kind of like that Fox show, the Fox Comedy Hour, which lasted about three shows or two. And but now he, I think what he did was he just sat down and just said, well, it, quote unquote, conservatives don't really have anybody kind of supporting their. And I've seen some of his HBO specials, and they're just not funny to me.
Well, you know, Dennis Miller is on.
Fox News.
No, he's on the radio too. Does he still have a radio show? Because that was singularly unfunny too.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like comedy. Believe it or not, I did some sometimes, and it, you know, you need a little bit more than one. I mean, sometimes you can get away with it, but you need a little bit more than his multi-syllable comedy. Okay? It seems like that's what it hung on. But now I think he's got a spot. I think he's on one of the days of the week. He's on Fox. Oh, when he hangs out with your another one of your pals, O'Reilly. And they just you know, and he pontificates, and he's just, I mean, I've seen that, it's been months, but, like I said, I can't even watch it anymore. But, I guess Miller, Dennis Miller just decided, you know, I need money coming in. I got a family to support. I just need money coming in. You know, I'm not going to try. I'm not that funny, or even if I am, it's too hard. It might just be easier to sell out, you know?
Yeah.
I think that happens a lot. Hell, I mean, look at anybody who's on, I think, any of those shows.
Well, I'm really, really careful about that, though, because or about that allegation, Jim, because, well, take for instance, a politician. D.C., Washington, D.C., will do something to your mind. You start thinking that the world is D.C. instead of you start thinking that that's the real world, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a political Disneyland, and you know, in the realm of media, how do you define sellout? Make enough money to keep the bills paid and not sweat? Did Flimball sell out? No, he's been an asshole all his life. He's just a $50 million a year asshole now. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, they offered me one-tenth of that, you know.
Yeah, where do I sign,
I
right?
Quiet. Yeah, exactly.
But then again, sooner or later, ethics and morals and the basics of one's worldview come into play, because there is not enough money. I mean, $55 million could not make me do a right-wing radio show.
Right.
Because you could just as well ask me to do, you could say, I'll give you $50 million to do a radio show in Mandarin. It is not possible because I don't know the language, and I don't, you know, I'm not ethically challenged enough to do right wing stuff.
I could do like the token liberal. They always seem a liberal. I'm the leftist, but I'll use liberal, a token liberal they always seem to have on their panels. You know, there's always like four of them and one kind of middle of the road, not so right kind of guy. I wouldn't call him, you know, I mean, I used to watch, I used to catch some financial show they used to have twice a week on a weekend. And I noticed it was always 4-1. You know, for neocon hardcore, and the one kind of not so far right guy or person. And I flipped it on just a little while, a couple days ago, and it's even gotten worse. It's just, I couldn't even watch a minute or two. But,
no, before the retching, the gag reflex kicked in? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I can't even watch it as a goof. I used to kind of understand it like that, but I can't do it, you know. I just,
There are places where it's compulsory, like the doctor's office. I don't know why it is that doctor's offices put it on Fox. I don't know if there's money changing hands or I wonder sometimes if it indicates that the doctor I'm seeing is some sort of right-wing ideologue. But I take, you know, there's no skin off my nose. I'll ask to speak to the office manager and say, and you know, I don't betray myself as some sort of liberal, but I'll say to them, that's really stressful. Put it on the weather channel.
Right.
You know, this is a doctor's office. Don't be freaking out your patients.
Nice. That's shrewd. Yeah. Well, that's just like I'm trying to reach the point where I don't. Yeah, really.
Because everybody loves the Weather Channel, right?
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that's what's going on.
Of course, there's a gizmo out there, and I forget who it was that had it, but it's like the Foxbuster, and it's just like a little clicker that rides on your key ring. And you just, wherever you are that it's on Fox, you just click, and Fox goes away.
Boy, just flips it to another channel.
Yeah.
Boy, it'd be nice to go into a truck stop with that, huh?
Well, they really exist. I forget who. Somebody had one of those, and I can't remember. But they said they were great fun, Jim.
All right. Well, that's all my observations for the day. Except I saw you that 100. I'm sending it to you. I'm just going to mail it. I don't know what the hell is going on with my check or my computer. I don't know when I was trying to do it.
Well, no, you can't. You can't do it. You can't do it now because the website's down.
Right.
I mean,
I'll just do the U.S. Postal way, because even with my the website wouldn't even if I had, but even if I had figured out what I was doing wrong with the, because I sent you some money once and it went through no problem, right?
Yeah, you've done it in the past.
And then, me with, I'm getting better with computers. I'm getting better. So I'm recovering. I'm recovering 20th centuryist. maybe if I put it in tomorrow, maybe by Friday or Saturday, Monday, Saturday, whatever. So I just send you a money order. So.
Okay, sounds good. You've got the address?
Yeah.
Okay, good deal. Well, Jim, we sure do appreciate it.
All right. I'm trying to live up to my financial obligations, especially the left-wing communist conspirators, socialists, fellow.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim. You have a good evening.
All right.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Let's see here. We are right at the top of the hour. Thank you, Sal. Sal jumped in there. We are now $90 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Hopefully it will be met because, the month is off to a tough start. In the meantime, if you do want to participate via PayPal, just log into your own PayPal account, use the send function, and for the recipient, Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID @gmail.com. And click the little box that says I'm sending money to friends and family, and the transfer fees won't kick in. So that means like $3.33 a hundred, pretty significant. Top of the hour. All In with Chris Hayes is starting. Not sure when the coal segment will run. I'll be interested to find out. Let's take a break. And then we can come back and check in on some more right-wing Ebola freakout. Oh, fun. Jeremy sent this along. Otis Taylor. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Another man, who spoke again. Rain and fire, cross the ocean. Another man, who spoke again. Sitting down here, fall out of shelter. Paint my walls, twice a week. Sitting down here, fall out of shelter. Think about the slave, long time ago. 10 million slaves, cross the ocean. They had shackles on their legs. 10 million slaves across the ocean. They had shackles on their legs. Don't know where they're going. Don't know where they've been. Don't know where they're going. don't know where they've been. Sun goes out, you'll be standing, you'll be standing by yourself. Sun goes out, you'll be standing, you'll be standing by yourself. Shipmates, they cross the ocean, they had shackles on their legs. Shipmates, they cross the ocean, they had shackles on their legs. Don't know where they're going. Don't know where they've been. Don't know where they're going. Don't know where they've been. Shipmates, they cross the ocean, they had shackles on their leg. Food goes bad, food goes rancid, but they ain't in the way. Don't know where they're going, don't know where they've been. Don't know where they're going, don't know where they've been. Sun goes out, you'll be standing, you'll be standing all alone. Sun goes out, you'll be standing, you'll be standing all alone. All alone, all alone, all alone, oh, all alone.
Nice call, Jeremy. Nice call indeed. Otis Taylor, 10 Million Slaves. Here we are at the top of the third hour. And, aw, shucks. I hear that the happy anniversary wish for Todd and Kath made Kath cry in a good way. That's really sweet. Note says, I don't know if you realize how much you mean to we family members, but it's a lot. More than words can really convey. Thanks very much for everything you do. Thank you. Thank you. Because it is a two-way street. This lifts me up, too. It really, really does. Neither my days nor my life would be the same without this. And thanks going out to Asa. Asa just kicked us a little bit closer to finishing off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. We have $80 to go now. And a reminder that any $100 contributions get a gift package from Sparky. Your choice, smoky ghost pepper cheese or locally grown fresh pistachios. Yum, yum. Not kidding. Yummy. And so we will be waiting on a report of honey mustard pistachios in the fairly near future, because those have gone out. We know the jalapenos are good. We know the smoky ghost pepper cheese is freaking awesome. What did Tom call it? A meditation on hot pepper cheese. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Coffee breaks over, back on our heads. Oh, one last reminder. I will be, I mentioned earlier, I'll be joining Mike Malloy shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern time to talk a little bit of coal and some new developments, that sort of thing. Looking forward to it. Coffee breaks over, back on our heads. more, and this would admittedly be a heck of a lot more fun if the audio would run, but for some reason or another, Windows 8 has decided to not run audio from YouTube embeds. And I have no idea why. It would be nice to find out, but anyway, we don't have to have the actual Moran audio to make it Morans. We can do this. Oh God, we can do this, but it requires marching off into the cesspit swamp. So they've got, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that if it's Moran Monday and it's Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the subject is female, it's either going to have to be Elizabeth Hasselbeck or Andrea Tarantula or a Tantaris. It's a double bonus Moran Monday. John Stossel and his creepy porn mustache showed up on the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda program Outnumbered today to explain to everyone why it is that Ebola is no big deal. The rest of Fox spends all its time hollering about closing borders and keeping people out of Merca and generally trying to terrify the easily terrified demographic that watches that godforsaken network. So along comes John Stossel to push it in the other direction. People like Stossel are proud when they say outrageous things, especially if they are outrageous and defensive at the same time. You know who's, and it's a quest. There's a right-wing quest on right now to figure out who we can most successfully, not we, they, whom they can most successfully pin the blame for Ebola upon, he said. John Stossel has an answer. John Stossel wants President Obama to say that that Ebola is being overhyped and it's being pumped by news media like us, he said. And then he drilled down a little bit to make sure everybody understood who he meant by us. Especially you women who are more scared of Ebola. I'm being really sexist here. But there are real risks in life, but Ebola is, it may prove to be, it's unlikely, it's hard to catch. The regular flu kills thousands and thousands of people. There's so much other stuff. Driving a car in the rain, promiscuous sex, drinking too much. There are real things to worry about. This distracts us from that. Then, because he is a super genius, John Stossel said, that's what they said about SARS. Sandra Smith had said uncertainty was driving people's fears. That's what they said about SARS, bird flu, flesh-eating bacteria, all the stuff, global warming. That's going to kill us. Now, never mind the fact that SARS killed people. Bird flu has killed people. Flesh-eating bacteria has killed people. And global warming has killed people. But they're all just not, they're all just imaginary in the privileged world of John Stossel and his porn stash. Jesus. Yeah, by the way, the phone line is open. 304-574-8178 is the direct dial-in number. Skype to Skype is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N, 304-574-8178, and Bob Kincaid Horn. That's how you reach the program. A little breaking news coming in from Carol Baker. A federal court has ruled that the five-second rule, whereby police were arresting protesters for stopping for more than 5 seconds, effectively putting them on a forced march, is unconstitutional. Protesters are allowed to sit and congregate. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I wonder what kind of scope and reach that has, because that was not employed for the first. Ferguson was not the first time that was employed there. Much more. I got it right that time. We had it applied to us in the halls of Congress, waiting outside to get a seat in a hearing. Yeah. And they weren't kidding. Only it was in the reverse. You couldn't lean on the wall. You couldn't sit down. If you did either one, they would treat that as civil disobedience and arrest your ass and carry you off to the Capitol Police processing facility. Mm-hmm. So interesting. I wonder if it'll be appealed. You always have to wonder that. Of course, big inaction coming out of the Supreme Court today, and it's a good thing. The Supreme Court refused to hear challenges to marriage equality. I think effectively that means that we can have marriage equality even in West by Cole, Virginia. And I'm sure the little right wing freaks are hopping up and down already. I know for a fact Brian Fisher is. Oh, I wish we could play the audio. I miss things like, you know, Brian Fisher. He's just precious. But we're not going to get it. But I mean, he was in a hand-waving frenzy today. Because 11 states, Colorado, Indiana, Kansas, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Utah, Virginia, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Court actions that struck down their marriage bans are law now. 30 states. There are 30 states in which it is now legal for two people who love each other to get married, regardless of the artificiality of gender. Well, and there you go. Naturally, this was conniption-inducing for that proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher. Who is just absolutely certain now that Merca is going to go straight to hell. Oh, goodness me. This is, go figure. No, he said Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi stand, said it's unconscionable, unconstitutional, and un-American. Well, that's a bunch. National Organization for Marriage, outraged. Family Research Council, outraged. Liberty Council, outraged. And Focus on the Family, once founded by James Dobson, who wanted grown men to show their penises to little toddler boys to keep them from catching the gay. Outraged. Focus on the Family saying, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision not to accept five-state marriage cases sets the stage for further spread of same-sex marriage and with it a further expansion of threats to religious freedom. Marriage has always been and will always be between a man and a woman. Except that's not true. Ultimately, no court can change that truth. So regardless of legal outcomes, we'll continue to address the importance of one man, one woman marriage to families, society, and especially for children who have a right to both a mother and a father. Our concern continues to be for children who deserve to grow up with both a mom and a dad, as well as for the religious freedom of rights of people who strongly believe in God's design for marriage and want to live consistently with those beliefs. Oh, for heaven's sakes. And then there's Brian Fisher, who said, he referred to it as this decision not to decide, this action not to act, this represents the de facto Roe v. Wade of sodomy-based marriage. It's going to be virtually impossible now to stop this press and this push for nationalizing, imposing on every state in the union marriage that is based on the infamous crime against nature. Oh, those Thorazine blowguns can be, dart blowguns can be so handy. Hey, Brian, look, a squirrel. Don't you feel better, Brian? Oh, much. Still hating on the gays? Don't care. Good. See, better living through chemistry. What's up? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
This is Todd from South Kakalaki again.
Hey, Todd, how you doing?
Good. I feel like I might be able to lend something to this gay conversation thing, marriage. Because I was really against it way back in, say, late 90s. I guess because it wasn't something that affected me, which is weird because I was living in a very gay city. Philly's really gay. There's a lot of gay people in Philly. But I guess the thing I was concerned about was the financial end, you know. But as long, you know, I just had, it was a lot of people around me who were different and, downtime at work, you get to talk with people and everything. And I mean, at the end of the day, who cares? I mean, that's your business. And as long as the insurance companies and everybody follows through with what they're supposed to do, that's what matters. Because if, you know, as hard as life is, my God, if you can find somebody that you can fucking live with, go for it.
What? You know, but the idea that this is being promulgated by right, that this argument is being made by right wingers who follow the literal truth of a book in which weddings were marriages were property transfer contracts between two men bartering women in return for sheep and camels and goats and stuff. Well, cognitive dissonance is where they live.
Exactly. And then the funny part, one of the funny parts is that it really appears that they're always the ones that get caught doing the quote unquote weird stuff sexually. You know, they're supposed to be the party of family values, but you got Diaper Man Vitter,
Larry Craig and the wide stance toe tapping, yes.
Was that the guy? Because I was bringing something up way back. Like, I mean, I was probably a late teenager. The dude who was at the black guy, and he was out there at in the Midwest at the Boys. What is it, Boys Town? And he was funneling young boys to the Congress, so they would have these pages. I mean, there was.
Oh, who was that? Mark Foley out of Florida?
No, this was worse than Mark Foley. This was way worse. The guy's name was Larry, though, because that clicked on me when you said Larry. Oh, my God. There was a whole.
No, Larry Craig was the Idaho guy who was cruising the Minneapolis men's room and got busted. And then claimed, no, he wasn't tapping his toes to try to get...
The foot tapper.
Yeah, the toe tapper.
The foot tapper. Well, the guy I'm talking about, this is way back in the early 80s, somewhere between 80 and 84 probably. He was in Boys Town, and he was recruiting young boys to go to D.C. to be pages.
I remember that story, yeah.
So, and HBO had.
I think that came out of Nebraska.
Okay, yeah, somewhere out there in the Midwest. Yes, right. But and they're supposed to be the same. I don't know. These people they had this disconnect, man. It's always trying to tell people what to do, but they're always doing some fucked up shit. So I don't get it. I just don't get it. I noticed it's the story you're talking about, but let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You know, what do you think about the way schools are funded? Public schools.
I think it's antiquated.
Mm-hmm.
Probably very very inefficient. It varies from state to state, but largely based on property tax assessments, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it creates a fundamental unfairness, and it's been dealt with. The court even tried to deal with it here in West Virginia, because if you live in a little county with poor revenues, you can't afford good schools. If you live in a big county with good revenues, you can have the best schools in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fundamental inequity that cheats a child out of what is an absolute right, to an education.
Absolute right. See, I fundamentally believe that if we could address that issue, there will be a large percentage of our problems in this country that could be solved. Because I grew up in an integrated neighborhood in a big city, but when you grow up around different people, it exposes you. Exposure is everything. And when, you got the white flight thing, they didn't want to be around black people or, whoever. It doesn't matter. You just didn't want to be around a certain type of people. But children don't know any different. Children don't know.
No, racism. Racism is taught. Plain and simple.
And it's taught in the home, and it's
taught in the church, and it's
I had to bring that up because I've been to so many schools and all over, and it's just and people say you talk to people whatever you watch a move here because the schools were good, and that's great, suburban Atlanta, my God, it's like the United Nations, but everybody's it's not about race there, it's about class. And that's a great thing, when you're at that level, that everybody's not at that level. But if we could conquer that, this country will be so much stronger, and it will be where this country's supposed to be. That's the strength, as Dr. Bill might say. I don't know, maybe the strength in the Constitution, It would help us out a lot. I really believe that.
I think if you could come up with a means whereby an element of fairness was how to put this, if the federal government was administering it,
and we took it out of the, and we made it impossible, for instance, for Texas to ruin textbooks for the entire entire United States by insisting that Phyllis Schlafly replace Cesar Chavez in American history, for instance, or something stupid like that, which they do, or, you know, insisting on math books that show that, that say that 2 plus 2, and then you put a picture of Jesus and it equals 5, and that's okay. I think we would be a better nation. I mean, you're familiar with Plessy versus Ferguson, right, Todd?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so Plessy versus Ferguson establishes the notion of separate but equal in terms of race. But I think we have a fundamental problem in the United States that I call it the Plessy problem, because there are areas of our culture and our society and our government where you have separate but de facto separate but equal.
Are you going where you're saying it's not about race, but it's about class, and it's like it's
No. Well, I mean, I guess I am indirectly, Todd, but what I'm getting at, I mean, I want to cite specifics.
Okay.
So why is it that if a child happens to be born in Texas and goes to a bad school in Texas, or say to a school in Colorado where this woman wants to teach children that the United States ended slavery voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
Why should a child be cursed? Why should a child be damned to that when a child in Massachusetts or California or Washington or Oregon can get a decent education?
Yes, John Roberts.
Well, sure. And it extends as well. Look, you know, we talked about this at some length on Friday on the front porch. There are more uninsured Americans in the state of Texas than any other state. Why should being born in Texas, the accident of birth, and remember, we use that accident of birth language in advancing civil rights. Okay?
Right.
You know, there's not a person on this planet who is personally responsible for her eye color or his skin color or either's gender or gender dysphoria. Nobody is
right.
Personally responsible for that. It is all due
to here.
It is all due to the accident of birth. Or let us say, instead of accident, let us say the randomness of birth. And consequently, how are we not living in a separate but equal country when the randomness of the birth of a child in Texas means that when they get old enough to, if they grow to adulthood, that they will then be cursed to live without health insurance if they're poor and working poor? On the other hand, the same person, through the accident, randomness of birth in California or Massachusetts, that person, if they get sick when they're at work, they don't have to lose everything. Why do we tolerate that, Todd?
It's highly disturbing, is what it is. And I can explain this. I'm going to try to explain it really succinctly in a couple of sentences. Okay?
Yeah.
We all have to interact. This is, as folks keep saying, and it's true, just like we have folks coming from Western Africa, and they may have Ebola, they may not, or whatever. This is a global economy. It's a fast-moving world now, okay? So if we want to compete, that means we have to have a first-rate educational system and a first-rate healthcare system, which we do not, I have to go off on a tangent, which we do not, because in an academic sense, the way things are rated in terms of healthcare, one of the first nomenclatures, one of the first ratings is newborn deaths. We're very high. We're like 36.
Oh, yeah.
Around there. We float around there. There's what they call a socialist country. They're way up. They're high.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's all kinds of these numbers all over. And the question is, you know, the right wing Todd likes to holler about how, you know, states' rights, and you know, if there's any government going to get done, the only way good government can get done is down at the state level. Okay,
yeah.
because they live in a state of perpetual disgust, distrust, and terror at the federal government. And the thing is, though, the only hope I think we can put the states' rights argument to bed, if it hasn't been already, that, you know, somehow states are the laboratories of democracy. Bull. The states have largely proven, especially the old Confederacy, that they cannot address the basic needs of the people. So I guess I'm a federalist. I believe in the power of the federal government to get things done. I think a federal government that was managing education for the entire country and had some level of standardized education would probably result in a better educated country as a whole.
That's exactly where I was kind of trying to go with this conversation. For some reason, I was, I don't know, earlier today, I had on the horn, and it was an older episode from September. Dr. Bill was on, and it was a Federalist paper. I forget the number, but it was where Madison and
he was live today.
Oh, he was live today.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Anyway, they were talking. You know, he was talking about. Patrick Henry was making a very good argument against the Federalists. Don't hit me on this, but anyway, it was about, you know, the time-honored argument over states and federal rights. And it's a tricky argument because, you know, you want to have local control, but at the same time, some things are just morally wrong. But going back to the education piece, where we are now, this is 2014. And I don't know if you remember some of the other comments I've made, but I've been to many, many, many schools, okay?
Yeah.
And it just seems like, my God, we're in a world economy. What's wrong with just telling kids the truth, having a truthful educational system? You can have, like, maybe 20 different school designs tailored to your environment, where you are. You know, a school in New Hampshire might not have the needs environmentally as a school in South Carolina or Florida or Texas, just because.
Well, yeah, but I mean that's the physical plant, isn't it?
But I understand that, but it also ties in. See, all these things tie together, and the curriculum, and I don't want this to be labeled. And as soon as you say that, though, you see, you know what the other folks are going to say? Well, this, you want some socialism? No, see, these people have trouble with the facts because if they don't like the facts, then they had to label it something else. You know?
Yeah.
Slavery happened. You know, and when they say, well, you know, my daddy's an owned slave. Well, guess what? You have stock in your IRA or, you know, you pay taxes, and my people pay taxes too, but they didn't get shit for their taxes. They didn't have paved roads.
Yeah, well, you know, what if back at that website, Letters of Note, I remember Dr. John turning us on to that letter of a former slave to his old master. And he had been invited to come back to the plantation. And he said, are you going to pay me back everything you owe me that you never pay? Because, see, there's reparations. But this is one of those essential discordant hypocrisies of our culture. If you mention reparations, you know, lots of white people go, well, I ain't never owned no slaves. Why are they going to get some free money? And yet, on the other hand, we also have I don't know how broad your knowledge of, you know, legal stuff is, but the right to inherit wealth from one generation to the next is essential.
you know, the right wing squeals about you know, death taxes. Well, they're estate taxes, and you know, being able to freely pass.
They want to protect. They want to make sure their children have what they have.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, you see language in legal boilerplate that says, to him his heirs and assigns forever. So we've got vast amounts of inherited wealth in this country. We've got some wealth that goes all the way back to the beginnings. And nobody ever says boo about that. But in point of fact, people who were enslaved had their labor stolen from them, and to this day are due recompense for it. So that if it was paid out to them or paid out to their heirs and assigns forever, it's the same principle that's at work in estate law. But the thing is, in the cognitive dissonance that is the right wing mind, for lack of a better term, they're totally separate. White folks can inherit money down the generations. Black folks cannot be paid now for what was stolen from their ancestors hundreds of years ago. That just ain't American. Well,
if you want to, I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to be just painfully honest. I really did not have much interest in that type of reparation type argument or conversation until I spent a lot of time in the South, and especially where I am now. The way that a certain demographic here talks and carries themselves, That shit is a carryover. I'm sorry. This shit is fucked up. I mean, the educational system is screwed. They just let the kids go. You cannot get a job. Look, I can talk on the corner like the next, you know, black dude or whatever, but I know how to take a command of the King's English when it's necessary. Because that's just, I mean, come on, I worked in an office. I want to go on back into my past. But anyway, so my point is, yes, there's a reason for that. Why were my people paying taxes and they got little or substandard service all those years? No education. The books they would get, they might have pages and they might not. It doesn't matter. It's just a bunch of fucking niggers. It doesn't matter. You know, that shit carries over.
Sure it does.
You would not believe shit I hear. You would not believe.
And let's understand that we can't. See, I was talking about that Plessy nation with healthcare and education, Todd. There's no way that we can argue that there is not a racial component to that. See, if let's put it this way. If white people were the only people getting Social Security, the Republicans would never try to privatize it. If white people were the only people getting Medicare, the Republicans would never say a goddamn word about it.
Of course they wouldn't, because they deserve it, because they're white folks.
Yeah.
White folks deserve everything. Those lazy-ass, shitless niggas don't need shit. Right? Listen, did you see any of that Roosevelt? Listen, you know what? When I saw the first few episodes of the Roosevelts, it's amazing. Things have not changed very much at all. The same argument, the Tea Party people, they weren't funded by the Koch brothers, but, I mean, it's the same Federalist against, you know, it's the same argument. It's very interesting. It's very, I mean, you know, Hoover was like, oh, we'll just get out of it. No, it doesn't work like that. And I remember the second day I was listening to Washington Journal on CNN, and this, I'll say she was a white woman. She sounded white on the phone, but she could never tell, you know. But the hatred in her voice of the Roosevelts, and I was just listening. I'm like, well, how can you hate somebody? They're trying to help the poor people. I mean, it was just abject poverty. I mean, it looked like Dickens' London. I mean, why would you hate against somebody who's trying to do something for it? You know. Especially someone who was wealthy.
Yeah. Oh, but remember, FDR was described as a traitor to his class.
Because he was telling the truth?
Well, see, okay, let's understand something. Having a lot of money does not equate with having a lot of brains. Sometimes you do get really smart rich people, and you wind up with, you know, with Roosevelts and various others. But it isn't, but they are not inextricably linked, Todd. And consequently, you have rich people who think that whose only concern is getting richer. Okay, and they did not understand during the time that was the Great Depression. They did not understand that the things that FDR was doing was he was doing not to hurt them, but to save their necks and keep their heads attached to their necks and keep them from getting free tumbril rides. Because during the Great Depression, we were as close as we have ever been to fundamentally realigning this government.
And they told them that.
Yeah,
and apparently they did not believe it. I mean, come on, a bank
holiday. Yeah, because they were too damn dumb. They couldn't, or their brains were just Swiss cheesed with by greed and lust and avarice.
Okay.
They couldn't understand that folks were going to were close to getting the pitchforks and the torches, and that they weren't going to go after each other. They were going to come after some rich folks and put them up against a wall.
Well, you know, you're delving into white privilege now, and somewhat. Now, this is race and class, obviously, but the white privilege, I mean, come on, because that's what's controlling things. But
yeah.
this is, folks need to understand, and just regular people, if you do not understand white privilege, here is a very, very short example. Remember Cliven Bundy in Nevada?
Sure.
All right, and his supporters. Now, they had folks out there with rifles, guns, shotguns, whatever. They had a lot of weapons. They had folks who had laser sights, trained on federal agents. When I say trained, I mean aimed at the federal agents.
Absolutely.
Okay? Now, let's reverse. Let's say that all those people were blacks and Mexicans. What do you think would have happened? Just think about that for 1 second. Then let's fast forward. Let's fast forward to maybe, what was it, two or three years ago, when a black woman who was off her medication and she had a baby in the car, and I've been to D.C. many times, weeks on end, just like you, and they have these things that come up out of the ground near the Capitol, these pylon things that come up out of, you know, so they can just stop you when you can't get in, you can't get out.
Yeah.
They shot her dead. They almost shot the baby, but they killed her dead. Now, the other guy gets in the White House, he's chilling, going in the refrigerator, making a ham sandwich. They didn't shoot his ass, did they?
No. A right-wing editorial cartoonist turned it into a cartoon about watermelon-flavored toothpaste.
See, we have to come to terms with what white... And until white people understand what white privilege means, we're going to have trouble. And we did not make the waters muddy. Black people did not make the waters muddy. We didn't ask to be here. We didn't ask to get raped. We didn't ask to be mixed. We didn't ask for none of that shit. You know, and we don't hate white people. And white people are scared because they know how they are. They know they'll be raised in hell if they have gotten treated like we got treated. And they don't understand how we're okay with it. We're like, you know, fuck it, move on. Get over it. But they can't do that. They have to come to terms with that shit. White people need to understand what white privilege means. And I've only heard you and a couple other people who have a platform talk about that. And that's a problem. Because as soon as you say that, people can see that the hairs jump up on their arms and shit, you know. And then the pupils dilate, and they look like they're on acid for 2 days and all kinds of things, you know. So I mean, I'm serious, man. This look, and Obama is not that damn black. Get over it. He is like fucking Jack Kent would have been. Remember Jack Kent?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I would have voted for him. I would have. I was of age. I would have voted for him. You know, but we gotta get this thing together. And I think the reason, and I'm gonna try to bring this full circle again. The reason I brought up the schools is that if we had schools that were just like when you learn in school, everybody's equal and we all have an equal chance in society, which is bullshit right now. It might be true if all the schools got equal funding. Everybody had a nice school to go to, and the schools are nice, and they all had soap and toilet paper and no holes in the wall and heat. Kids would want to go to school, and, you know, everywhere, in every neighborhood, and have integrated neighborhoods. If you were around different people, we wouldn't be worried about all this bullshit. Half of this bullshit that we deal with will be done.
Yeah. Education and funding for education are the key to so many of the ills we have in this country. Why do you think that the right wing so desperately wants to keep it in, you know, micronized control? I mean, there's a reason that they want to teach evolution in schools in places like Kansas and Alabama and Texas. Because it reinforces the religion industry, and between the two of them, they can maintain absolutely rigid control of the population. And they do it with ignorance and fear.
Well, you know, I'm trying to get other middle-aged people like myself to mobilize, because they discount younger people, okay? Younger people are discounted. Oh, they're just idealistic, you know, they're on dope or whatever. But middle-aged people, man, I've seen some shit in my life. You know, I've seen things.
Mm-hmm.
I've done things, I've seen things.
Yeah, by the way, Carol noted, this guy is awesome. And she said, you know, equal opportunity versus equal outcome is a myth. And I'd say, yeah, it's past myth. It's a lie that gets told to people. You don't.
You know how many times I've been arrested here?
No.
On bullshit? It's disgusting.
I had a story earlier today about from our buddy Isaac Well, it's over at Raw Story. Watch Ohio man films himself intense verbal battle with cop over his ID. Of course, you know, in South Carolina, where you are, yeah, you know, they shot dude for reaching for his ID.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, yes. But at one time I had to give this crazy state, I had to give them some props. They jumped on top of it because they knew it was going to be, people are tired, man. People are tired. I'm weary.
I mean, I got a story here that I haven't gotten into in the stack, but it at least bears mention. The Indianapolis Star reported that this past summer, an Indiana woman is making the claim that this past summer, an Indiana state trooper pulled her over and asked her if she had accepted Jesus Christ as her personal Lord and Savior.
No, that's bullshit. Can't be. That's the Onion. No, can't be.
Nope, sorry. It's the Indianapolis Star, which is not a parody site. She has filed a lawsuit in federal court with the help of the American Civil Liberties Union against Indiana State Trooper Brian Hamilton. He wanted to know if she had a home church, and he gave her a pamphlet asking her to acknowledge that she is a sinner.
Lady, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? Because if not, I'm going to have to pull you in. The judge is going to see you maybe next week, maybe not. Listen, this is some fucked up shit.
Yeah, he sort of trumped up a traffic charge, had the cruiser lights flashing, gave her a warning.
and started asking her if she had a home church and was Jesus her savior. Hey.
That's fucking frightening. Oh, I don't know. I might just die, man. That's just no. And I'm a Episcopalian.
Shit. That may be the only thing that's saving you down there.
They don't like that too much either. But I'm serious, man. About integrated neighborhoods are very important. Seriously. And you know, like, all right, when you grew up in a major northeastern city, there are Muslims everywhere. Most of them are NOI, which is Nation of Islam. They people from here. But there's also Middle Eastern people. And then, wait a minute, then you've got the whole influx of folks that came over from the Bosnia-Herzegovina conflict.
Yeah.
Okay. And they just look like the people from Kensington. I mean, for one year, I lived in a neighborhood called the Badlands, and you can pull up YouTube and see what that shit. That shit's fucked up, man. That shit's fucked up.
Well, you're going to love this Indiana story. Of course, the Indianapolis paper went and asked a question of Micah Clark, who is the executive director of the American Family Association of Indianistan. I'm sorry, Taliban, Indiana. And he said, "Well, I have people pass out religious material all the time. Mormons come to my door all the time, and it doesn't offend me. This case may not be the most persuasive time to talk to someone about their faith, but I don't think that a police officer is prohibited from doing something like that." I know. And by the way, Texas Betsy just pointed out something, and she's an educator, and she would know. She says, "Do you know that more schools today are 90% plus segregated than were segregated 50 years ago?"
Yes, I do. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Exactly. Hey, Todd, I hate to do it, but I got to get out of here. We're fresh out of time. I got to get hooked up with Malloy.
Have a great night.
I'm gonna try. You take care, and we will talk soon, Todd.
Thank you.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina Stan. It is time to get out of here. Thank you to Sal and to Asa. They have taken us down to only $80 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That we fell short of our evening's fundraising goal by $130, and we fell short Friday and fell short Thursday. And well, you know how it goes. But thank you guys. And I have good news from John Fox. He says we'll have the website back live in some fashion in a matter of hours. So thank you very kindly, John Fox. What you are and have been to the Horn for 9 years, man. 9 years is inexpressible. Thank you to everyone for the time, the finite, precious time you spend listening to the program. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to, again, John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And if you didn't catch it when it was running live, make sure you catch All In with Chris Hayes this evening and every evening this week for All In America, Coal Country. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.